Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the confused timetable of free speech, because I'm confused. Today's Tuesday. I had been doing Mark Hollett every Tuesday for a while, but now he's back to Monday, and now I usually do Cato on Tuesday, but I think I want to put in this show, because I think this is going to be a lot more time sensitive than my show with Cato this particular week. So if you tuned in for Cato, tune back in on Thursday. And in the meantime, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, and send badly needed fundage. Back to you, Andy.
Thank you, Patrick. And also I want to thank all the folks over at RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. They actually made a post of the last Ankoff report, its own unique page on republicbroadcasting.org. So we thank them very much for doing that. Now, before we hand over to Mark to open the show, I've got a clip that I'm going to play. This is a YouTube. I will include it, a link to the video in the post for this show. But I really wanted to play it for Mark and Patrick for their reactions. This is some sort of presentation by Joe Biden to Elton John. The YouTube video is marked up on September the 25th. I believe it was a few days before that, but certainly no more than a couple of weeks ago. Here we go, folks.
It's my great honor, and I mean it sincerely, to present the National Humanities Medal to Sir Elton John. Major Yang, please read the citation.
Honored sir, good evening everyone. The President of the United States awards this National Humanities Medal to Sir Elton John for moving our souls with his powerful voice and one of the defining songbooks of all time. An enduring icon and advocate with absolute courage, who found purpose to challenge convention, shatter stigma, and advance the simple truth that everyone deserves to be treated with dignity and respect.
I think we surprised him.
I just said to the First Lady, I'm never flabbergasted, but I'm flabbergasted and humbled and honored by this incredible award from the United States of America. I will treasure this so much, and it will make me double my efforts to make sure this disease goes away. Your kindness, America's kindness to me as a musician, is second to none. But in the war against AIDS and HIV, it's even bigger, and I can't thank you enough. I'm really emotional about this. Thank you.
By the way, it's all his fault that we're spending $6 billion in taxpayer money this month to help AIDS, fight HIV/AIDS.
It's all his fault that we're paying $6 billion this month to fight HIV/AIDS.
Does he have AIDS, or did he spread it around? They spread AIDS everywhere. Gosh.
It's, just a remarkable comment. Yeah, Mark, your comments.
Actually, I've already discovered the cure for AIDS, and that's the avoidance of homosexual sex acts and intravenous drug usage. And that's not $6 billion bucks.
And also being Haitian, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That was the gay joke back in the 80s. It was the hardest thing about having AIDS is convincing your parents that you're Haitian, because you don't want to tell them you're gay or an intravenous drug user, right? So,
but you've got every Elton John album. That's right. Good.
I think I had one or two albums. I saw him in concert. It was actually really sad. It was in 1980 when he was not doing very well with his career. And at one point he'd, you know, run across the stage and it looked like he was going to run back and like jump over the piano, like literally jump over the piano. And he runs up and stops at the piano and then crawls underneath it like a child and gets back into his seat. And it was just sad.
Before we get on with World War III, how much money did you pay in 1980 to see that?
Oh, I doubt it was more than $5.
Okay. Very good.
I think ticket prices.
Money well spent.
Yeah, ticket prices these days. They've gone through the roof. I mean, when you look at concerts now, people are paying, you know, into the thousands to get a couple of tickets to see an event. It's really quite remarkable. Just very quickly before I hand over to Mark, Elton John has done some good songs. He's the sort of person that I don't think many people have got like a studio album by, but many have got a greatest hits album by, and that's where you find most of his stuff. But anyway, enough on that. Mark, please take it away with your Dankoff report.
Hello, Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankoff coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas. All kinds of things to discuss today with Patrick on the air and with Andy. Obviously, a lot of things Ukrainian. In this particular case, we're talking about partial mobilization of Russian forces. We're talking about annexations, Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporozhye, and Kherson. Those have now been approved by the State Duma. And, of course, today, Tuesday, we are talking about approval by the Federation Council, which will make it, where the Russians are concerned, absolutely legal. So I think our friend Alexander Mercuris at the Duran is speaking the truth when he says that there's a brand new war that's going to start from the 5th of October.
Oh, you just dropped out, Mark. He's still with us.
Taj operations. And in this particular case, virtually everyone agrees, as does Douglas McGregor, that this was an American-British operation in all likelihood. Everything points to it in terms of motive and means and opportunity. More on
and
that.
I'm just going to interrupt for a second. Your voice dropped out for about 5 seconds, and I want everybody to understand that when you're saying it's a British and American operation, that you're talking about the sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, correct?
Absolutely correct. Thank you. And Douglas McGregor agrees that that's what it was. And, of course, virtually everyone outside of American mainstream media knows who the culprits are in this situation. Motive, means, and opportunity, with some of the specific circumstances, of course, that Patrick will probably bring into the mix here in just a minute or two. There is the Ukrainian takeover of Krasny Liman. What does that mean? If anything at all, what it means is very heavy losses in order to finally take a city, a very small place, in terms of the so-called Kharkiv operation, counteroffensive. This is something that's going to be very, very interesting. Is it ultimately a military victory for Ukraine, or has it spurred on the partial mobilization and the annexations and the introduction soon of 300,000 Russian troops of various kinds of descriptions into the mix in this conflict? You know, in terms of the Kharkiv region, it is interesting that the Duran reports that at the time of the so-called counteroffensive, that the Ukrainians had at their disposal 400,000 men on the ground in Ukraine. The Russian military, not counting the Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics, the Russian military only had 50,000 people on the ground in that country, meaning that basically you had an 8-to-1 edge, numerical edge, in favor of the Ukrainians, which is the only reason, in conjunction with these NATO interjections of troops, are weapons, various kinds of technologies, that this thing is not already over. But that's about to change, folks, and that's about to change, of course, courtesy of the partial mobilization and these annexations. So keep an eye on that story. Krasny Liman is likely to be the turning point in the war, but not in the way that the West is reporting it in their media. It's likely to be the day that the Russians finally decided that the so-called special military operation wasn't going to cut the mustard. Therefore, we have moved to the next phase, which are these annexations and the so-called counter-terrorist operation, which is most aptly named, especially after Nord Stream 1 and 2. We get into the whole question of American immigration, or shall we say immigration from south of the Texas border coming into the United States illegally. RT reports that that is now around 7,500 illegals a month entering the American Southwest. In September of 1992, or I should say 2022, we see that 225,000 illegals crossed into the border. Across the border, that breaks the old record of 192,000. So when you start watching this whole situation, Joe Biden is concerned about Zelensky. Joe Biden is concerned about a war that the United States has no business in. Joe Biden has basically been involved clearly in an act of terrorism involving Nord Stream 1 and 2, and what should be the eventual severance of the German relationship, not with Russia, but with the United States. All of this is going on at the same time, of course, that Joe Biden is more than happy to have 225,000 illegals a month crossing the border into the United States from Texas. Keep an eye on that story. There, of course, is the election in Italy. What are we to make of Giorgia Meloni? On the one hand, she appears to be a populist right candidate who's gotten a lot of negative coverage in the Western media, which is absolutely something in her favor. But on the other hand, there are all of these pro-Zionist statements that she has made, especially in more recent times, that make us wonder if, in fact, she isn't another instance of controlled opposition. That will be a story to watch. And, of course, Patrick will have his own take on that particular election in Italy. Then we get into Iran. Sonia Vandenende has sent me her latest from the Tehran Times on Soleimani as hero. The Cradle. Kit Clarenberg has an excellent article out. That one's entitled Decoding the Pentagon's Online War Against Iran. As false flags continue and as targeted operations continue in that country, in the wake of the controversy over the death of a 22-year-old woman and whether or not she died of a medical condition or whether she was, in fact, beaten to death by the so-called morality police in Tehran. We don't really know what happened there, but nonetheless, much like the George Floyd story in the United States, it is giving the opportunity for outside forces to once again intervene in a circumstance that should be a domestic matter that seems to have the fingerprints of Zionists all over it. Out there in all kinds of different fields, the return of industrial warfare, Alex Vershinin of RUSI, is something that we've run before. It comes back into play in terms of relevance, however, in regard to what is likely to be and what is clearly going to be an escalation in conventional warfare in Ukraine and whether or not the West can keep up with Russia in terms of conventional ammunition production. Take a look at that story. Big Surge has one entitled War Has Just Begun. He's basically talking about the very things that we've been talking about in this show introduction here in regard to what's about to change. The war in Ukraine, which we can date certainly to the 24th of February. If we're going to be honest with ourselves, we can go all the way back to the Orange Revolution of 2004, 2005 in that country. And then, of course, the illegal Western coup d'etat in Kiev in February of 2014. The war began at all kinds of different levels in those episodes, and certainly it began where the Zelensky regime is concerned and its immediate predecessors after the February 2014 coup in regard to killing 14,000 ethnic Russians in Donbass. This particular situation, the war has just begun, and Big Surge is talking about the fact that Russia is just getting warmed up to the war that's going to start after, in fact, the Federation Council makes it absolutely legal that where Russia is concerned, Lugansk, Donetsk, Zaporozhye, and Kherson regions are a part of Russia. Once that takes place, all other things kick in terms of Russian military doctrine. In regard to Russian military doctrine, we might mention something that's quite fascinating in regard to something that I'll include in all of the news items for this show, and that is a news clip of Vladimir Putin's speech on this whole business of these annexations. In this particular speech, a terrific speech, by the way, you can not only read the exact translation of what he said word for word, the Kremlin's website for English-speaking and English-reading people, but you can also watch the speech. I'll make sure that you get it both in its entirety as well as in terms of excerpts translated by a reputable translator into English. But did we notice, folks, in the context of Elton John's Western world and Joe Biden's Western world, that Vladimir Putin cited the satanic forces and the satanic, using his words, satanic character of Western leadership in terms of endorsing every type of sexual perversion imaginable that is designed to destroy nation states and to destroy Christian culture? Mr. Putin hits the nail right in the head, which brings us to something that was running on the remnant this week, and that is the religious character of the war between Russia and Ukraine. I'll get you a link to that story as well, but there's a compelling essay there that underscores what we already see and what we already know, and that this is not simply about the sovereignty of nation states in regard to territory and in regard to possession of their own natural resources. This involves culture. And in this particular case, this involves, in my view, as well as Mr. Putin's, the satanic West, the satanic leadership of the Western world and its endorsement of every single type of sexual perversion imaginable, especially the LGBTQ variety, and especially transgender surgeries for 4 and 5 and 6 year old kids and 150 different genders, allegedly, and all the rest of this cancer. Mr. Putin noted all of this in his annexation speech. We take note of the fact that when it comes to real Christianity, why is it that so many quote unquote Christians in the West are backing Mr. Zelensky, our Jewish drag queen comedian who somehow manages to become the president of an Orthodox country drawn into a war with another Orthodox country. Is he fighting for Ukraine, or is, in fact, Mr. Zelensky nothing more than a surrogate force for the New World Order? So take a look at that one. One other story I'll mention in terms of shameless self-promotion, and that is that my own interview with Sputnik is now published. It's entitled The Biden Debacle and the Apocalyptic Quicksand of Ukraine. It's running not simply in my own site. Sputnik, of course, published an excerpt of what I had to say, but the thing is now running in its entirety, both at Don Wassel's American Freedom News, as well as Jonas E. Alexis at VT has run it. And in the latter one, in terms of the Geiger counter count that they have at VT, as of this morning after 24 hours, that particular interview that I gave to Sputnik just on VT alone had 2,500 readers. So with that, we turn over things to Patrick. What direction would you like to go in, kind sir? What would you like to discuss first?
Well, you had mentioned the Italian election.
Yes.
And Georgina Meloni.
Meloni, I believe, yes.
Like basically every so-called right-wing populist politician I can think of in Europe likes to brag about how in they are with the Israelis, how much they love Israel. You know, I remember seeing on Tucker Carlson an interview with Viktor Orban, and they were bemoaning the anti-Semitism and anti-Israeli aspects of their opposition. Oh, they're all for Israel. And, you know, even in South America, Bolsonaro, who is, you know, a right-wing populist, but he had the Israeli military come in and help with some sort of flood relief. So that's just that it's very unfortunate. It's a fixture of politics in white countries. Is
much like, you know, the Alternative for Deutschland party, the same circumstance, allegedly German nationalism, right? Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, it is clearly pro-Zionist in its rhetoric. Now, let me ask you a follow-up question on this, Patrick. Can you truly have a nationalistic populist leader or party or movement that incorporates a pro-Zionist perspective?
No, you can't. In the context of Japan, it's what I call fake nationalism. Like in Japan, Israel's not an issue, but the fake nationalists in Japan, they still embrace the relationship with the United States. Their relationship with the United States is the venue for Jewish/Zionist penetration into Japan. When I say penetration, I should say domination. Wherever you have this, if you've got a movement that portrays itself as nationalist and, you know, populist, and yet they won't identify I try to avoid the term enemy and other military terms, but if they avoid the source of their problems, if they avoid naming the source of their problems, and yet they want to talk about the problems, they necessarily have to misidentify. And so in the United States today, the Tucker Carlson and a big hunk of the MAGA movement, because they want to be so in with Israel and so pro-Jewish, then they go off on China. And that's what we see here, and that's what you see in Japan. And maybe in Europe it's going to be more anti-Russia-ism, but not necessarily. I mean, so with Meloni, so she's pro-Israel, she's buddies with Benjamin Netanyahu, and she supports Ukraine. Now, she's going to be in coalition with the Northern League of Silvio, what's his first name? Salvini. What's his first name? Something Salvini.
Matteo Salvini.
Yeah, Matteo Salvini, and then the that's the Northern League, and then the the Forza Italia or whatever the name of Silvio Berlusconi's movement is. Now those two individuals are
make the world go away. Say the things you used to say and make the world go away.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
That's the Northern League, and then the, what is the Forza Italia or whatever the name of Silvio Berlusconi's movement is. Now, those two individuals are friendly, and it's certainly in the case of Berlusconi, personal friends with Putin, and so we hopefully they'll exert a positive influence or mitigate Mrs. Maloney's unfortunate views on Ukraine. So maybe we can have some guarded optimism there. But still, they're still friendly with Israel, and you look at Europe and you look at, for the most part, the United States, and the only criticism of Israel comes from the left. And, you know, it's going to come from Rashida Tlaib or Omar. What's her first name? The Somali lady. It's going to come from Jeremy Corbyn and his based older brother in Britain. You're just not going to find it on the right. And it's so unfortunate. And I don't know. I'm going to stop droning on, but I get to the point where, like, I've gotten to the point where I just don't know if the American right or American white people can ever save themselves, because they just absolutely cannot identify the source of their problem. So how can you save yourself if you can't identify the source of the problem? And any hope there is for America, and it's faint hope, but it is in the as far as I'm concerned, is in the Russians and the Chinese slaying our dragon, and then maybe we can make something of what's left over. I don't know. That's where I'm at in the current year, in the current month.
Yes, and that's pretty much where I am too, Patrick. In terms of my own interview with Sputnik, which again is out there in its entirety, both with Don Wassel and with Alexis at VT, I provide a link to a story that's out there on antiwar.com that deals with the Democratic Party as the war party now in the United States, even more, you know, far more so than the Republican Party, ironically enough. And when you start looking at all of these billions that have been voted for Zelensky, all of these so-called progressives in the Democratic Party, including, of course, Bernie Sanders, obviously, but also several of the people that you just mentioned as part of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party, have voted to support not only all of these military appropriations for Zelensky that are just ongoing, like a running meter in a taxi, but when you look at the overall picture of the Democratic Party and the largest defense and intelligence budgets in American history, this is, in fact, their real record. And when you get into this whole business of Zelensky and Ukraine, I find it striking that a formerly close friend of mine, an American with heavy press television connections historically, nice gentleman, nonetheless, as I have mentioned before in this broadcast, said that he was disappointed in me for supporting evil Putin, quote unquote. Well, not only did I proceed to list all of the reasons why the Russians are right in doing what they're doing in the Donbass, but then I also made the point that I think you're making as well, Patrick, in your analysis of this Italian election, and all of these pro-Zionist politicians in both the United States and Europe who claim to be nationalists and populists, that you cannot support Zionism and be a nationalist or populist. You cannot support Zelensky in this situation with Putin's Russia and be a nationalist or a populist. Because if you are a nationalist or a populist, you understand something about the New World Order and about their drive for world government, and that this is essentially a disproportionately Jewish and Zionist operation all the way. When we understand it from that perspective, with all of the available evidence that is there to support that, there is only one position that a Christian and nationalist can take in the United States or in Europe, and that is to support Putin's Russia, not simply for all of the reasons related to nation-state sovereignty, but all of the reasons related to Christian culture, and which side is the one that is fighting for that culture. Clearly, it's Putin. It is not Zelensky, who was on the side, if you want to put it this way, of Elton John, and on the side of Joe Biden, on the side of LGBTQ and Kiev Pride and all the rest of it. So in this particular circumstance, I think the lines are well drawn. But again, disturbingly so, in the United States, whether you are talking about the so-called progressive left with all of its rhetoric on these subjects, or where you're talking about an American right that claims to be nationalistic and Christian, nonetheless, we begin to see what the real agenda is so many times when we expose the total ideological incompatibility of supporting Israel and supporting Zelensky's Ukraine on the one hand, and being a nationalist or a populist or a Christian in any legitimately defined sense of the word.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. I try to monitor the press in a variety of countries, and you know, I can see RT and People's Daily in China, and sometimes I follow obviously the British press, the French press sometimes, and I checked in with a Japanese, I used to follow it a lot more, but a Japanese he's actually the leader of a small new opposition party that's supposed to be, you know, conservative, and I don't know if they call themselves nationalists, but and he was in on his blog or whatever, he was talking about the trouble that Putin is in. He's in so much trouble, and there's all these massive lines of people trying to get out of the country to avoid the draft,
Anytime you're feeling blue.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's one. Rad. Consistent results when used for heart problems. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious that if he hadn't made it to the hospital in time, he would have died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives, he tried Extendivite. While taking Extendivite, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hello, I'm Peter Serafine, and I'm the new host of National Intel Report on Thursdays here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm a gun-owning constitutionalist who believes that the only role of government is to protect my rights. I believe the First Amendment makes us free, and the Second Amendment keeps us free. If those ideas sound good to you, then join me in the National Intel Report, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hey, do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the ones in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, or fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you'll see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Check us out at SusannahSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
You say you want me back again. That's the time I'll come back home to you.
Oh, the trouble that Putin is in. He's in so much trouble, and there's all these massive lines of people trying to get out of the country to avoid the draft. And then I see that his the source of his information was the Institute for the Study of War. You're familiar with this, I'm sure.
Victoria Nuland neocon Central. Yeah.
It's literally run by Victoria Nuland's sister-in-law. And I'm sure this guy isn't aware of it. And, you know, the big problem that you've got in some countries, like in Japan, is because of the language issue, their problem in getting information. Their information on the outside world, you know, even if they're depending on their own press is depending on the New York Times and CNN and you know, maybe the Wall Street Journal. And they're just not getting the information. And it's almost like you're, you know, when I turn on my internet, I get like a Yahoo News feed, or I get the MSN News feed, and you see just the most ridiculous articles about Putin's back on his heels. He's on his heels. Everything's falling apart. They're gaslighting people, which is bad enough. But then in these foreign countries where unfortunately in some of these foreign countries, they really don't have access to other information because of the language issues. And I still think this is why the Chinese are freaking out about the coronavirus, because I don't think they're the source of it. I don't think they understand it. And I think that they believe, to a large extent, I think that they believe that you had 1 million people in America die of the coronavirus. And they're not having a million people die, and so it must be because they're doing the lockdowns better than we did.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And you know, when you're watching all of this unfold, one of the examples, of course, clear examples of this in terms of lack of proper understanding of sources gets back to this whole business of the Institute of the Study of War. If anyone wants to do a check on this on Google, folks, you'll see all of these familiar names popping up very, very quickly in regard to who the people are who run this thing, who the people are who publish for this thing, and, of course, at least a few of the funding sources. So when this is the nature of what even good people are relying on for supposedly credible information, we are in serious trouble. And in regard to this whole business of the draft and Russia and so forth, it's important to understand, first of all, that this partial mobilization involves approximately 1% of the total manpower available to that country in a military crisis. You're talking about 300,000 people, when in fact, in an absolutely catastrophic situation, they could rely on a manpower force of 25 million. When you start talking about dissidents in Russia where the draft is concerned, I think that Mercurius's figures at the Duran are just about right in terms of these protests that have been reported on in the West. These protests in total have numbered no more than probably 2,000 people. And then, of course, when you start getting into the whole business of the mobilization itself, these are people who were already in the military serving on a reserve basis who have been suddenly called up. So in this particular situation, 300,000 Russian troops, Russian military personnel that are now going to be committed ensuring that these four annexations stand up in terms of defensible Russian territory. This is all put into perspective, even in terms of the limited character of this mobilization, when you consider that in the Vietnam War, and it's at its worst point for the United States, we had 500,000 men involved in that conflict. So yeah, some perspective is absolutely needed here.
Right. And when we say involved, we mean actually deployed. You had, I think, a peak of 565,000 deployed in Vietnam.
Yes.
You know, and of course, you had more who were on bases in the United States or in Okinawa or, you know, other places like the Air Force. The bombing raids over North Vietnam, to a very large extent, were coming out of Okinawa and or maybe out of Clark Air Force Base in the Philippines. But you had massive mobilization. In and in Russia, it's important to understand that these 300,000 people being called up, these aren't necessarily just going to be thrown into a battle. To a large extent, and maybe for the main part, they are going to be replacing the professional soldiers in places within Russia, because professional soldiers from bases in Russia are going to be deployed in Ukraine, and to a large extent, these people getting called up are going to be backfill, at least initially. So they're not just throwing in people from the streets the way the Ukrainians have, the way Zelensky's just been rounding up people, sending them supposedly into battle. They exist in bunkers for a few weeks, see half their comrades get blown to pieces, and then when they withdraw, they've never even seen the enemy.
And yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you a question on this, as long as we're still on Ukraine and Russia. Matters economic. The Ukrainian economy, the European economy, the American economy, and the Russian economy. Just those four basic economies. How do you see economic developments impacting things as we start getting into winter in Europe? What do you think is going to happen economically to these four sectors? Again, Ukraine, Europe, United States, and Russia. Who is going to be favored in terms of economic outcomes?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the Ukrainian economy has already collapsed. They're on life support with all this money that's being sent in from Western governments, United States. Like all these checks that the United States are writing, for the most part, it's not even military aid anymore. It's just paying their bureaucracy to function. The Ukrainian tax revenue is not even supplying half of their budget at this point, so they're the worst. The Western European economies are the second worst. They're going to have a very cold winter. You've got inflation, you've got energy shortages, you've just got a real mess. And the euro is doing very poorly. The Hound is doing very poorly, and maybe Andy could speak to this. It seems as if Liz Truss may not last the end of the year, and their exchequer, what is it, the exchequer of the chancellor of the exchequer, Kwasi Kwarteng. Jesus.
Yeah, Kwarteng.
Oh! Are we still there?
Yeah, you're still here, don't mind. Okay. Yeah, correct.
Kwasi Kwarteng may not last the end of the week. And so they're in bad shape. Kwasi Kwarteng passed a mini budget, and the pound is crashing, and the mini budget is seems to be giving favors to his friends or whatnot. I don't know, but it hasn't been received very well. The United States is doing really badly. We have a lot of inflationary pressure. The saving grace for the American economy at this point is something completely unsustainable. It's the dollar is so strong that, it's been used as the safe haven. The dollar is strong because the foreign currency markets have been treating it as a safe haven from this war. But of course, the dollar strength comes at the expense of the pound and the euro and the yen, which are all at, in the case of the pound, I think all-time low. In the case of the yen, it's about a 30-year. The yen's at a 30-year low against the dollar, and so if to the extent that anything can stabilize the euro and the yen, which are needed for the European economies, it's going to come at the cost of more inflation in the United States. The United States, once it's the dollar's been strong against those currencies, has also been strong against the Chinese yuan or renminbi. And once and it's completely unsustainable. This is not going to last. And when the dollar comes back from the stratosphere and comes back even to where it was at the beginning of the war, you're going to have massive inflationary pressure from imports then. And so we're in bad shape. The Russians, the last economy you mentioned, well, when these sanctions were imposed, even the Russian central bank, they were expecting, say, 15% contraction in the GDP or whatever. And now they're talking about maybe 2-4% contraction in the GDP for this year. But already the ruble has recovered. The ruble had lost about half of its value in a week, and then it's recovered at the strongest it's been at in for about 6 years. And the thing is, the Russian economy has reoriented to the Asian landmass in a very sustainable way. It's absolutely sustainable. It's new relations with China, with India, with Turkey, with Indonesia, with Pakistan, with Bangladesh. This is all completely sustainable. They're creating these new alternative institutions to the old Bretton Woods system or the America-centric system. And they're going to be doing very well. They're doing okay this year. They're going to certainly survive this year. The Russian people understand why they're facing a certain amount of inflation and a small recession. They understand why, and they're willing to put up with it, and are poised to do very well next year.
Yes, let me say one thing in terms of the American scene, and then I wanted to ask Andy something if he's out there on the Liz Truss situation. And then I also wanted to ask Patrick about the presidential election and the runoff in Brazil and the position of both of the Brazilian presidential candidates on this whole subject of Russian sanctions. But just dealing first with what I thought was the most amazing statistic that I've read in quite some time, and I incorporated it in my interview with Sputnik. Get a load of this one, folks. If you like 225,000 illegals a month crossing into the United States from the Texas border, think about this one in relationship to the stock market. Thus far in 2022, thus far, the American stock market has lost almost $10 trillion of its value. That is some 43% of the gross domestic product of the United States. Just consider that statistic for a moment. A stock market decline of almost $10 trillion, and we have 3 months left in 2022. Andy, let me ask you about Liz Truss. I am hearing from the Duran and from some other sources as well that you have in Britain right now one thing going on with monetary policy, something completely contradictory that is apparently going on with fiscal policy. What do you make of this whole business of increasing interest rates to stem inflation, speaking of monetary policy? But then in terms of fiscal policy, starting to spend like there's no tomorrow. What is going on in Britain, and what is the outcome of this kind of monetary and fiscal policy going to be?
Well, Mark, I mean, the situation here essentially is they're spending the money because they're trying to prevent the British public from having to pay so much out for the increased costs of energy. But they're not asking the energy companies to take any sort of hit. Okay? So we're still going to pay it, just be in taxes in the future. It's just too much for people to have to do now, which, of course, I would say they need to do something to the energy companies to limit their profits whilst this is going on. But ideally, I would not want to be involved in this conflict with Russia and Ukraine in the first place. We should have kept our noses out of it. Of course, I don't believe that Liz Truss or Boris Johnson beforehand was running the British government. I believe other people above them run it, which is why decisions are never made for the benefit of the British people. For example, when the Conservative Party members in the UK were sent their ballots and told they had to either vote for Liz Truss or Rishi Sunak, many of them said, we want Boris Johnson. You know, you Conservative MPs decided to get rid of Boris Johnson, which not they, but many, many people who aren't Conservative Party members. It's like in America. You don't have to be a Republican Party member or a Democratic Party member to vote for either candidate. And that's what the vast majority of people do. They're not members. They just choose who they vote for. And they weren't happy about that. But I think the situation here, and I'm sorry if this doesn't answer your question, but I'm quite conspiratorially minded. I feel that Boris Johnson was on board with these people, but not 100% on board, only 90-something percent on board. And that's why we've got Liz Truss, because she turned round. I think it might have been even on, I don't know if it was this show or another show, but shortly after she got in, she came out and said, you know, the British people are going to have to suffer because of what's going on in the Ukraine, but the Ukrainian people, they're having to suffer, you know, violence and things like that, so the British people shouldn't complain. And that's not the sort of thing that someone representing the British people should be saying to them. That's the sort of thing somebody who's basically being puppeted by someone else would say, trying to guilt us into supporting this when it's none of our business. So I hope that goes some way to answering your question. Back to you, Mark.
Yeah, it certainly does. And this whole issue of suffering of Brits, suffering of Germans, suffering of others in Europe because of this Ukrainian-Russian war, I would take it to the next step and say that much like the situation in the United States, which has been at least less impacted thus far, emphasis on thus far, that in the case of all of our countries, that none of us had any business utilizing Zelensky to ignite a conflict for globalist reasons that was not in the interest of anyone, Russian, Ukrainian, or British, or German, or French, or American, and so forth and so on. So it is a hideous situation, but you know, going back to something that Mercurius at the Duran likes to talk about, it seems that all of these people, whether you're talking about the Institute for the Study of War, or you're talking about Johnson and Truss, or you're talking about Biden and the pro-Ukraine lobby in the United States, these folks never seem to pull back from bad policies, but they double down on them. And this, of course, gets back to something that Andy has talked about in this show before, and that is that there is a very famous British expression that if you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. And it seems to me that what we are seeing with all of these so-called leaders in the Western world is far more frenetic digging in regard to $1.5 billion in American money, at least, a month, folks, a month going to Zelensky, who claims that you know, he needs $5 to $7 billion in additional monies a month simply for the function of his government. This has nothing to do with these draconian military expenditures that the United States keeps coming up with. The latest one to the tune, I think, of some $12 billion. Let's get back into the whole situation for a moment of immigration illegal into the United States. Yes. But immigration, massive migration to Europe from points southward. Some people will call it the global south. I would ask both of you guys, Patrick and Andy, whether you're talking about the Texas-Mexican border or you're talking about what we continue reading about in regard to migration of non-Europeans to Europe. Is there any end to this in sight? And in conjunction with these other draconian developments that we're talking about, are we literally dealing with the literal death of the West here, demographically, culturally, economically, and politically? Or is there a way out of any of this? Are we down to what I think Patrick was hinting at, where ironically enough, those of us who are nationalists and populists in the best sense of the word are relying on Putin's Russia and secondarily China to beat the people internationally who've given us all this domestic misery? How does this play out? Patrick.
We took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met up with the British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British...
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle, or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S, Secret.com.
How absurd does woke gender ideology have to get? I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. A number of girls playing for a high school volleyball team in Vermont have been banned from using their own locker room after filing a complaint with the school about a transgender teammate. The dispute started after a transgendered player at Randolph Union High School allegedly made an inappropriate comment to some girls while changing in the locker room. School authorities replied to the complaints with, "There is plenty of space where students who feel uncomfortable can change in private." According to Vermont's state law, students can play sports and use the locker room that corresponds to the gender with which they identify. And apparently, if a transgendered student is inappropriate, too bad. The biological girls get pushed out. Ah, isn't equity great? Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem Parabellum.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Hounds couldn't catch 'em down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Are relying on Putin's Russia and secondarily China to beat the people internationally who've given us all this domestic misery? How does this play out? Patrick.
Well, you know, and we talk about the southern border. I heard from a Canadian podcast that this isn't just a southern border anymore, that actually people are pouring across the northern border now. Certainly not at the same volume, but it's Canada has a lot of easy, you know, non-visa. You don't need a visa to get into Canada from a whole bunch of countries. And so people are flying into Canada and walking across the border in Vermont, in New York, and other places, because the border is very unguarded. You can just walk across some fields and around Champlain, New York, for instance. Actually, I've done that. Back in the days, I wanted to be able to avoid a Vietnam draft if the draft were to come back. And yeah, it's very easy to walk. I'm serious. Sorry.
You
I'm not gonna go fight no Vietnam. Not me. Forget you.
Yes.
So you got that.
You're not as dumb as you look.
not nearly. Yes. Not by a long shot. I'm just getting to the point where the West is dying. I think, like a cancer patient, we may survive, but with amputations. I'm sorry, it's hard to say, but we are going to, if we survive, it is going to be in truncated form. It is going to be where we just accept a lot of water that's gone under the bridge. And the only way we're going to, and that's not a guarantee either. And it is dependent very much on Vladimir Putin prevailing in his current conflict. And the only way that he has been able to prevail is because, first and foremost, he's got the economic support of China. And so there you get this China-Russia alliance. You know, a lot of people want to bitch and moan about China or about Putin, and they're all agents of the Jews or whatever. I'm sorry, this is your last chance. This is our last chance. And honestly, it doesn't matter what people in the dissident right think about it. It's not in our control, and we can watch from the sidelines, and we can root or we cannot root. But that's the way I see it. Andy?
Exactly. To me, exactly what you're describing here, and we'll get to Andy on this. I feel kind of like I'm in a situation in terms of scoreboard watching, as it were, in athletic terms. As say, if I'm a baseball team and I no longer control my own destiny, but I'm relying on someone else to win or lose on the last day of the season for me to get into the playoffs, I kind of feel that that's a poor sports analogy. To what you're talking about, Patrick, and that is that those of us on the legitimately populist, dissident, anti-Zionist, anti-globalist American right, it's now out of our hands. We're relying, ironically enough, upon a previous foe to help us pull this thing out in any sense of the word. That's my take. Andy?
Thank you, Mark. And I think that we're going to have to wrap up, certainly for Patrick's audience. But before we go, just a headline off the Daily Mail, Monday, October the 3rd. Biggest ever bird flu outbreak means 48 million chickens, turkeys and ducks have now been culled across UK and Europe. And the reason I raise that is we know about all these meat processing plants and food processing plants in America being hit by all sorts of strange things to take them out. That's not just happening in the States, it's happening here in the UK and in Europe. So I fear that, as Patrick said, the West could be in for a very difficult winter, and it's not just a lack of energy, an increase in inflation, but also a lack in food. And when it's happening on such a broad scale, I would have to say, using the principle of Occam's razor, that it seems likely that it was orchestrated that way. So I hand over to Patrick to close his show out, and then please hand back to me.
Well, I want to thank Andy, and I want to thank Mark for joining me today. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store
or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.